moving in the right direction.
Don't worry. Where'd you grow up?
In Vancouver.
Were you born here?
No, I was born in New West. Mm-hmm. So I think we lived in New West till I was 2 years old. And then we moved to Vancouver to an apartment on Robson Street, 1048 Robson Street.
What did your parents do?
My dad was a cook for the senior Mr. Woodward. So he had, you know, a large estate, and because of my dad's background, then we had kind of the best of both worlds as far as food and the way it was presented. And my mom was home with us until, I guess, my youngest brother was born, and he was about 4 years old, and she started back at work as a clerk. So they were hardworking people. It was hard to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. But we had a good life. We moved from Robson Street when I was about six, when we had a home on 16th Avenue that my mom still lives in. Mm-hmm. So that's just East Vancouver. And so we were out of the Chinatown area. And I can always remember my cousins who lived in the Chinatown area coming and visiting us and saying, "Oh, you're so lucky you have a kitchen and a pantry with a sink." Because usually, you know, if you live like in the tenements, it's kind of just one room and then the sink is there. So we were lucky. Mm-hmm. We were lucky. It wasn't until years later that I found out that we were really quite poor, but I never felt that when we were young. So mm-hmm.
What year did you move then, when you were six?
Oh, figure it out for me, Tam. 44. Yeah. And so, when was VJ Day?
45.
45, right. Because I can remember standing on the porch and we had the flags out and my uncle was returning from India because he served in India. And, yeah. So, yeah, it's 44.
That was when you moved.
Mm-hmm. Life in Robson Street was great, though.
Were there other were you the only Chinese family around?
One of two, maybe. Mm-hmm. One of two. Because I can recall one other friend was Chinese, and her father owned a furrier shop.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Anyways, tell me about Robson Street life. What was so fun about it?
I could visit the merchants. We had an apartment above the shops, and there was a candy store, and then just a grocery store along that street, and I can remember going into the Greek merchant, and he made taffy. I don't know if it was once a week or how often, and it was the old style where they put it on a hook and they pulled it. I became very friendly because I always got some candy, you know, ulterior motive. And it was nice to be able to go along the back lane. I just made myself really comfortable. I was a very bratty child, so I didn't have any fears. Mm-hmm. I just made myself comfortable wherever, and much to the chagrin of my parents, because I would never come home and eat my meals at the regular time because I was always fed by all the neighbors. So it was just, I guess, what else did we do? Oh, we just met kids from school and mm-hmm. played and... No, I think it was the shops that was the most interesting. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, life was pretty much mm-hmm. the same for a child. You know, you had your friends.
Where did you go to high school?
Fairview High School of Commerce, which mm-hmm. was located at Broadway and Ground. Well, it's no longer there. So it's commercial. It was commercial school.
Mm-hmm. So you were training to be a secretary?
A secretary. And I think probably... what led me there was that my father became very ill when I was, I guess, about grade 10. And I was the oldest in the family. There were three of us. And so it became apparent that I have to find a job and probably help support the others. And that's how I ended up there. And my job that I ended up with was at Shaughnessy Hospital. I became a medical secretary in the x-ray department, and it was a so-called government job. And then it was thought that, oh, if you got a job with the government, you were just, you had it made. So I stayed there for 7 years. I think I wanted to make the move, but I was really discouraged just by my family because, oh, it would be so difficult for a Chinese girl to get a job anywhere else. But things changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally left there because I married and I had a child. And there was good reason to quit. But I had some good years there. And also, to the way the hospital was structured then, it was, you know, the departments were very small and intimate, mm-hmm. so you got to know the people. So that was a great mm-hmm. learning experience.
Were you the only Chinese working there?
I think there were about two or three others. So actually, it was a rarity.
Mm-hmm. This would have been in, what, the 50s when you were working there?
59.
So you had just come out of high school then in 58, mm-hmm. 59.
Mm-hmm.
When you were growing up, did your parents have sort of things they would say or lessons about this is what you got to do as a young Chinese person to survive in this world? Were there kind of lessons or things they would say, you know, you got to be careful or whatever, about how to make it in the world?
I can't recall that, except the only thing that was really, really important to them was that I should be able to speak some Chinese, and that from the age of 7, I think, my father signed me up at Chinese school. And so that meant daily bus trips down to Chinatown. And, of course, I went because they said I must. What I actually learned is another thing. You go there and it's a completely different ballgame. You have your friends and, of course, you know, you absorb something, but not as much as we should have. It was wonderful social atmosphere. I met all these other people there. We looked forward to recess and how to spend. I learned how my friends spent their money. I didn't have that. I didn't have the dimes and nickels that they did.
Really?
No. And that was all it took for them. I couldn't believe it. Thinking back, in the candy store right down below of Wakyu,
mm-hmm.
right on the corner there. I believe that shop's still there.
Right. It's called Zhonghua.
Yeah. And then we switched to Dai Gong Hao Hao, and there it was over to Hastings Street to a little shop called Skipper's, where the kids used to buy the fresh chips wrapped in newspaper and then put it in a bag and loaded with vinegar and salt. But I met a lot of good friends there, a lot of good friends, and somehow I managed to pass each grade. I don't know how I did it, or whether the teachers were just sympathetic and they wanted us to keep attending.
Were you a good student at Chinese school?
I would say I was mediocre.
Did you like going?
I think I accepted it because I knew I must. And then I took it for what the enjoyable parts. But what I really missed was everything that we did seemed to be to do with learning. It was very, very serious. I can remember when Christmas was approaching, and a few of us got together and we had said to our teacher we'd like to have a Christmas concert, because this is what we do at our regular public schools. And so they agreed. They said, well, if you want to, that's fine. And do you know what we did? My cousin and I sang Winter Wonderland as part of that concert. So we didn't have any Chinese art to identify with. We I can recall that we had Japanese friends and they always had Japanese dancing. Mm-hmm. But for us, we just seemed, we had nothing in the way of arts. And I really felt that, like, what is there for us? Everything is so serious. We come and we learn our characters and we do our brush strokes and we memorize. And that was about it.
But there was nothing sort of physical or cultural or dance related.
Mm-mm. The only thing that we ever played with was, I don't know if you ever knew of it, but we would cut up the old japji bowl and put a little coin in the middle and we'd kick that.
Like a shuttlecock.
That's right, yeah. And that was that, and jacks. Played a lot of jacks at Chinese school.
That was for the girls. Mm-hmm. What did the boys do?
I don't recall. Don't recall what the boys did. I really don't.
When did you stop going to Chinese school?
I was about, I think when I entered high school, mm-hmm. 13 or 14.
Mm-hmm. And after that, did you still go down to Chinatown very often? After you had started high school?
No. there wasn't any real reason to once we stopped Chinese school. My father was quite strict in many ways. He didn't want us, what he thought was wandering about aimlessly. And, you know, I can't recall anything particularly Chinese that he said to us, because he seemed fairly well integrated. Like, that didn't seem like a big thing, except for being able to speak Chinese to maybe grandma, which would be my mother's mother. But my father seemed to have more Caucasian friends. And so, actually, when I was going through high school, I didn't have very many close friends. I was more or less discouraged from having too much fun.
Really?
I shouldn't really be asking to go to movies and things like that. And I think it wasn't until the last year of high school that I actually sort of spread my wings. And maybe that was the turning point. I just had decided that, all right, like, Daddy doesn't want me to do things that are of no value. This is how he put it, because probably just having a good time, that wasn't really counted. So, I don't know how I made a contact, but I joined the Air Cadets. Mm-hmm. And he did have this kind of an old-fashioned view that if you were going to join up, I was going to go to war, is what he thought. He says, if you join, he says, someday you're going to be going away. And he really, really did not like that idea. But I was really defiant, and so I joined.
This is in your last year of high school?
Yeah. Yeah, I joined Air Cadets, and that opened up an interesting world mm-hmm. for me, because that's where I learned the drill mm-hmm. and found that the Air Cadets, you know, there was a very straight way of life. You had to listen to your commanders and just fall in with the rest of the group to belong. Mm-hmm. And anyway, got my background for drill from there. So my dad wasn't too happy about that. And also, too, because he was ill, I think a lot of things I blocked out because he was so ill. And
How did the drill lead to the Chinese girls drill team? How did that all sort of, how did that start?
Well, then I left cadets because I guess I stayed there for a couple of years, and there was Ground Observer Corps. And I graduated from high school, went into working. Somehow I kept up my friendships with some of the people that I met at Chinese school, and there was a Pender Y.
Oh.
So now I was working. So because I was working, I had the choice of having free time. You know, I didn't have to keep my nose to the grindstone. So that's probably when I went down to the Penduai and met all these people. And Bonnie Koo was one of them. I found out that the Y had some interesting groups for the people who lived down that mm-hmm. area too. So I think we had a lot of dances on the weekends. A group of us were probably just sitting and chatting one evening after get together. And again, that feeling of here we are at the Penduai and we're attending dances and we have Glenn Miller songs, but we're in Chinatown. Like, what is there that's Chinese? You know, we know we're different, but what is there that we can do to make us, you know, enjoy what we have and be proud? And then we thought, we knew that Victoria had a drill team. And we'd heard of Seattle. We'd seen the Seattle girls come up and perform. And someone said, wouldn't it be nice if we had something like that? And we were all talking. We thought, that would be great. Wouldn't that be wonderful? And so I think that's where it started. And then one thing led to another. And they said, well, we need someone to teach the drill. Do you think you could handle it? Mm-hmm. And so that's how we did it. And I think we practiced at home with sugar cubes, with formations. And my mom kept those sugar cubes for the longest time. And that's how the drill team started. Yeah.
So you were in it from the very beginning?
Yeah.
Oh, how many girls started with it?
Oh, well, you see, it slowly grew. I mean, we must have had a dozen at least to begin with. And we practiced, at least a dozen. We practiced in the Strathcona yard. And then we moved down to the Ding Ho parking lot. And then somehow other people got involved and we realized that we would have to have some sort of support because we need costumes. And some of the parents were really good in supporting us. One thing led to another, and then we got certain merchants in Chinatown. Then we had spokespeople like Tommy Ma, Tommy Ho, Bob Lee, who were all in the Chinatown area. And they approached CBA then. And that's where we got most of our backing. And our first parade that we attended, we had makeshift uniforms, you know, just black pants and white blouses. I think that was the first PNE mm-hmm. parade. Or, no, it was the community parade, Victoria Drive. And then it was Grey Cup. And we ordered red, bright red sweaters.
Mm-hmm.
And we had white earmuffs and gloves, white bucks. And I think probably the year after we had our uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
But they were all designed by, I guess Tommy Ho must have just approached someone about costumes. And that's how they turned out. And those are the green ones, the green ones that we saw in the exhibit.
The first ones were the green ones.
Yeah.
Were all the girls native-born girls like you? Or was there a mix of...
They were all born in Canada. They were all born in Canada, I think. And we started with about 12, and of course, as word grew, we expanded. I think at the highest point, we had about 50. For one of our parades, the largest number we had was 50. So we thought that was pretty good. But yeah, they were all Canadian born, as far as I recall. Yeah. There weren't too many immigrants around then. There weren't too many new Canadians then. Very, very few.
Mm-hmm. This is we're talking about, what, 1959-ish? When the team
58.
What do you think was the sort of the impact of the drill team on Chinese people here when they saw the team performing? And what do you think the team did for the community? Or,
well, because they were mostly the local, you know, Canadians, they thought it was wonderful because it was giving their daughters a chance to come to Chinatown to meet other Chinese girls, because by that time a lot of them had moved to the suburbs. and thought it was a wonderful chance for them to do something, get involved. We had a good time. It was a nice feeling that we could share something with each other, with the community, because then it didn't seem that any of the martial arts groups were, they didn't seem to be really going then. You know, they didn't go out for the parades like they do now with the lion dancing that we have now.
I guess there weren't too many other opportunities for young people like yourselves to get involved in Chinatown other than the Y.
No. I think the only other group that got together before then was, there was a group called Mei Wan Choir. Yeah. I think they were the only ones. And then the only one that we seemed to hear of around that time was Harvey Lowe. And just yo-yo, and we kept thinking, how can we identify with this? Like, you know, what is, this isn't really Oriental, you know, or Chinese. Like, well, what else is there to do?
The yo-yo.
Yeah.
And the choir was singing, what kinds of songs was the choir singing?
Canadian songs.
Canadian songs. Hmm.
Unless I'm wrong, I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
Yeah. I was reading an article about it, and it said it had mostly native-born girls in it, but some China-born boys. And so this was supposedly quite interesting, but I don't even know how long they lasted, or they don't seem to have had as much of a public profile as the drill team did.
I think because it was probably the first for Chinatown, and so the merchants were really, really supportive. And we had some fundraising events, and you know, they were behind it. I didn't really hear anything negative about it at that time, and we didn't know any better. I mean, as far as the way the costumes were designed, we thought they were beautiful. They were flashy.
Was there criticism?
Well, no. Years later, I thought back, and I thought, well, I mean, they're just, it's like show business costumes, you know, with all that rhinestone and glitter. It's, but that's the way it was done then. We didn't know any better.
Yeah, it was sort of the standard all across, you know, all the drill teams had similar costumes, and that was the way that Chinatown was being sold.
That's right.
To Westerners at that time.
Exactly, and also too because of the opera style costumes, and then from the period of, you know, like the warriors, the pictures that we saw were somewhat of that type, quite flashy looking. So that's what we had.
What was the highlight of being in the team for you, or working with the team?
Oh, I think for me was just that we had something going that we could identify with. It was Chinese. To us was Chinese. And being able to make some nice friends. Yeah, sharing it with the girls, which up until my late teens, I just didn't, you know, have that chance. So actually, I started when I was about 18.
In the Air Cadets?
On the team. So I think that was probably the high point. And to see that people were interested and we were invited to different communities. They thought that it was wonderful that we had this group together. So
it's interesting to hear that even though the people, like you say, were moving away from Chinatown, they all still wanted in some way to belong to something that was down there. I think somebody else I interviewed said they all left Chinatown, but in a way they never really left. Was that the kind of feeling that was going on, that people had moved out but somehow were looking for something in Chinatown?
I think it was the whatever it is that binds you together. You know, for me, it was just the friendship, feeling that you belonged, that you belonged somewhere, because too, at that time, you know, it was hard to feel that you really belonged somewhere because you felt quite different. The prejudice was still there, you know, when we were going to school. And so there you could just relax because you were among your own, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just speak your mind. And some of the girls that joined, like there was, we had an age, I think we started them at as young as 12, and I guess I was the oldest, 18 on the team. So some of the parents came down. I can recall when one of the younger girls started, her parents came down, and the parent was really, really concerned that she was getting into something that was really worthwhile and that her child wouldn't be led astray. And so she soon found that there wasn't anything there that was going to, you know, lead her child astray, because we were very serious. You know, we had to practice, so.
How often did you practice?
Once a week, usually on Sundays. Unless, of course, we had a special event, so then it was just more often.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. You mentioned prejudice. What was the racial climate like then, sort of mid-50s, early 60s?
Wasn't terribly bad, but you know, there was some name calling, and what you did was you just ignored it.
Yeah.
You ignored it. That was all. And I think being close to the other Chinese people, like in Chinatown, it just made you feel that you weren't alone. You weren't alone, and you just continued on with your life. You know, no matter what you were doing. And then, of course, as the years go by, you know, things just change. They just, people are just more accepting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure there's still the prejudice. I don't know. Do you ever notice it? And you said that you felt really different when you were in the East because there aren't as many. But I think, too, because now we know who we are. That's the difference, is we know who we are. Mm-hmm. We know what we have. We know what we can do. And that we can just we can pursue what we want to do, and it doesn't matter really, you know, like we have our goals and we just go for them. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference, whereas before you may have a goal, but there was always that, well, you know, you have to be careful, they might not accept you, you know, that bit of fear. So now, I mean, we say to our children, whatever you want to do, it's there. Mm-hmm. And of course that's been for quite a number of years now. So that's nothing new.
Yeah, I guess for your generation, it was the very first time that the Chinese were coming out of, you know, that whole period when there was a lot of anti-Chinese feeling. It was like you had your, you know, the first lawyers, the first of everything was happening in the 1950s.
Right.
And so there is that kind of trepidation.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Also, to another interesting thing that you've probably heard is that when you walk down Pender Street, if you came down on the weekend, if you saw someone across the street, inevitably you would know them. And the streets, there was quite a lot of room to walk. And then that all changed because of the next influx of immigrants. And then there would be a time when you go down and you'd say, we don't know anyone. Right?
Yeah.
So that's the difference. But the drill team, you know, it remained steady. I didn't leave till 61, and the drill team, I think, continued for another year and a half after, and then, for one reason or other, they just disbanded, and that was just that for them.
Mm-hmm. I remember you telling me a story once about phoning in to make reservations. What was that story again?
I think it was just making reservations, and instead of using a very, very oriental name like Chan, I would use what? Lee? I don't know. Something that isn't quite as obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps feeling that you wouldn't be given as good of a table, things like that. And that was, again, that was my own, I think that was just my own feeling of just feeling bad about the times, probably, and within myself. I mean, you know, you don't have to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Did I really tell you that story?
Oh yeah, it was late one evening. I think we were having coffee at BC Royal or something. It was one of those.
Yeah.
But it stayed in my mind because I mean I have the thing that is similar in my experience is that when I go out to eat, I always tip, and I don't ever want to leave the impression that Chinese are lousy tippers. Even if the service is bad,
I tip
really well, and it always goes, why am I doing this? And it's sort of like, if I were white, I would probably have no qualms about not tipping.
Not tipping.
But because I'm Chinese, it's like, well,
yes,
something.
Forever. Yes, because somewhere down the road, it just might leave a very bad impression.
Yeah.
And you don't want to do that. Yeah.
So that's sort of like, it's my hang-up. I mean, it's sort of other Chinese people would probably have no qualms about going on.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible service, no tip.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that in all of our minds is that you want to leave a good impression for the others that follow. So,
yeah.
Would you like a cup of tea now?
Oh.